Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. The current economy has plenty of people concerned and complaining about the cost of groceries, gas, and other necessities, looking for ways to cut back and save. But what about ticket prices to attend a professional sporting event in the Philadelphia area? The price of attending sporting events never seems to get the same scrutiny, despite increases year over year. As a matter of fact, the demand for Philly's playoff tickets or to see the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles is higher than ever, even as people pay more to fuel up to get to the game or stock up the tailgate prior to it. In this edition of Enlighten Me, Delaware Public Media's Joey Rosari speaks with Matt Robinson, professor of sports management at the University of Delaware, to discuss how prices for sporting events seem to be immune from what's going on outside of the stadium or arena.
Matt, we know fans in the area, they would have loved to have been at Citizens Bank Park for the Phillies playoff games, despite the results of those first two games, or even the opening Eagles-Cowboys game at the Link. But yeah, Tickets are just so expensive for many, even with the economy the way it is and the economy down. Why does that happen?
Yeah, when you talk about a ticket, it's really about scarcity and demand. So one, if there's a demand, it's kind of driven by scarcity. So I think with the case of the baseball, the Phillies pay, you know, Major League Baseball teams, you know, play, 172 games, you know, over the course of the year. But there's only a limited amount of baseball games being played right now, and one of them happened to be in Philadelphia. So that scarcity of games and the significance of it, you know, is going to drive up that price on the secondary market. So I think what's always been interesting is that the rise of that secondary market is going to be dictated by that demand. There's people that literally, you know, entities out there that have those tickets, and, you know, they'll raise that price, and if somebody's willing to pay it, they'll take it. So I think when you look at the Phillies, you know, even more so maybe, you know, this is their third year, you know, that they've been in, especially that first year when they, you know, hey, this was, you know, the Phillies back in the playoffs, I think it was almost 8 years. There was incredible excitement around it. And so if people are willing to pay, you know, the market, you know, the price is going to be there. If they're not, then that price would decline. And the same thing with the NFL. You always talk about the NFL. There's, you know, there's only 8 professional football games, you know, or I'm sorry, well, no, that's 12. What, they play 14. So, seven professional football games in Philadelphia over the course of a year. And that which what really drives that price of that ticket. So again, it doesn't surprise me, you know, in that scarcity, that interest around it. It's a lot different than a game being played midweek in, you know, in April against the American League Central team that the whole season hasn't played out. So that ticket may not be priced the same as these tickets now.
You mentioned the secondary market and the role it plays here. Does it go even further? Because, one, it's competition for the teams, but it's also, if, you know, someone's willing to pay that much to see a game in some cases, why don't the teams just figure, why don't we just put the price up out there so we can get the full financial benefit? Is that both those things go into it also?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, like you said, when you talk about what the team is going to charge, they can't control that, you know. And again, I think that's partly where that secondary markets come in. I mean, the old days was the scalper. That's, you know, illegal. The secondary is there. But I always think that just in general, let's not even talk about the secondary market, but let's talk the cost that's associated with professional sports these days and major college athletics, even, and as that continues to expand in and around the NIL and the payment of these players, the cost associated with organizations being able to break even in some cases. So what does that cost? So you see it's not just the ticket price, but also the total cost of the fan experience. So let's talk parking. And, you know, I know that the Sport Business Journal, it's kind of the Wall Street Journal of sport, always kind of runs a number to say, okay, yes, ticket, but let's talk about a family of four, you know, 2 sodas, 2 beers, 4 hot dogs, parking, you know, and, you know, maybe a licensed product, what that total cost is for that evening, exceeds that price. But teams are dependent upon that revenue stream as far as their revenue generation. So I know that the NFL has a revenue stream, significant revenue stream in and around their broadcast, their national broadcast deal, but still the cost of admission is significant when they have salaries to pay and they want to remain competitive. And I think it's even more so when you talk baseball, that they always talk about large market, small market teams, that in New York has a larger local media contract than a smaller market team, like a Milwaukee, you know, or a Minnesota. And so that, again, when you start talking about ticketing prices and how significant they are, you know, that's factored in.
there's also so much competition amongst the secondary market. There's the different websites, even Ticketmaster gets involved. I think in some cases, some certain teams also have their own little secondary market deal going on. So that has to get into it too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and like you said, look, you know, I find it interesting when you'll see tickets and, you know, it's equivalent to buying stock. I mean, you'll see a ticket that's hot and then injury, whatever, all of a sudden you'll see that price drop. And I think you even see it on the secondary market. There's the one site that's out there that it's like the last minute tickets that, again, I had it at a set price. I didn't get anybody, but 5 minutes before, you know, hey, nobody's bought it. Hey, I'm just looking to break even on this thing instead of eating the ticket. And there's that market too. So yeah, I find it fascinating just the way that's evolved. And like you had said, the future of it, I don't know. But like you had said, the days of the teams, and you made a great point. The teams put the ticket out there, and then the scalper buying it and doing it illegally, you know, increasing the prices. But now that the secondary market is recognized and it's a part of it, I mean, even if you call, I know I've done this, you know, when you call a team about tickets, you know, they'll say it's sold out, but go to the secondary market. There's tons of seats there. You know, that we don't have any more tickets, but the secondary market has, them.
See, with concerts, a lot of people were complaining when Bruce Springsteen came to Philly the last couple of years, and his ticket prices were higher. And the excuse was, hey, if on the secondary market they're going to sell for $1,000, we're going to put it out $1,000 here for these floor seats, and people were complaining. But that's just part of the business now, right?
Well, I think the music industry, and I don't, you know, but you know, it's interesting there where they talk about how the business model of music has flipped. It used to be you made your money off your albums, and then you went out and did a tour to promote the albums, get people to buy more albums. But now when you start talking about the downloads and what musicians aren't making off of Spotify and so forth, that now that the concerts are the revenue generators for them. And so, like you said, I mean, I saw an interview with Springsteen just talking about that he always was like, hey, I kept my ticket prices reasonable, but just seeing what other people were charging because they had to, you know, try to make it, you know, to make money off of it. He goes, hey, you know, why shouldn't I, you know, kind of thing, you know, with it. But he, like, in his mind, he's still trying to keep it lower than what some others were charging, but understanding that that's the new model of the music industry, you know, with things. And I think it's really interesting with professional sport that now, if you think about it, it's almost all moving to pay, whether it be the streaming, whether it be cable. The idea of anything free as far as sport is concerned, I know that, you know, again, the broadcast on a Comcast, again, is that cable? You're paying for that. It's kind of interesting. But again, I think at the end of the day, it's about the cost of doing business in professional sport. And it's significant, and it's already occurring in college athletics. Now that you're looking at the top tier programs, you have to pay for that talent in order to remain at that top tier. And that gets passed on to the fan.
Also, is it for the professional teams, it's just so much easier to advertise nowadays because with social media, with email, they can reach the fans on a more personal level with the same message that they put on billboards or on commercials during the games. Like, I can't tell you how many emails I get a week. You know, they're not even specials or deals about buying tickets, going to the next game, the next homestand, whatever. Does that easy advertising for them play a part where people, all right, the economy's bad, but hey, I got this email, I'm gonna go to the game, I'm gonna go to the Phillies game tonight, or I'm gonna go to the Eagles game Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, the level of that they're using data analytics to reach you in a very specific personal way, you know, it's very high level, their marketing efforts now that's being done. And just like you had said, that whole idea that the information that we end up putting into the internet and how it's used to help target you with the right message about the right price on the right date at the right opponent, down to you saying this is an easy decision. Yes, you take a look at the size of marketing departments within the professional sport organizations. It's very strategic in the way they're reaching out to their customer base. I think the other thing too, with that, of the old day of pro sport, they used to say you were taking orders. You know, you sat back, you had a good team, you sat back, you took orders, meaning, hey, we're good this year, we're going to sell a lot of tickets. We're not, guess what? We're not, you know, we're not going to sell. But organizations can't be that way. You look at the 76ers during the process when they were, you know, arguably the worst franchise in the NBA on the court, they were actually doing very well with attendance, and it had a lot to do with their progressive marketing efforts of reaching out to people and communicating that, whether it be selling the entertainment value of the experience, putting together pricing and or packages that made it appealing to get people to come out to those events. So I think the old day of sport marketing was, we got a good team, we're going to sell out. We got a bad team, well, we got, you know, we're going to have to live with it. No, I think they're very strategic, what you had said there, that they will communicate with you to make it that it's an easy buy for you, that you want to do it.
Also, when the economy is going better, do the increases get higher, or is it just business as usual, whether the economy is good or bad? But of course, if they do get higher, usually with prices, what goes up doesn't necessarily come down, right?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing about sport, I think sport in general is, I'm not going to say recession-proof, but even back to 2008, look, people were taking the hit, so they maybe didn't buy four season tickets, maybe they bought two, or maybe they bought a mini plan. So sport is that thing that it's part of our culture that we make time. There's people that are buying their season tickets before they pay the utility bill, that the passion is so strong. Other products would kill to have the passion that sport fans have for their teams. If you want to look at it from a straight marketing sense, it's a product, and there's incredible brand loyalty to a product that in many cases may not, I'm not going to stop completely. I may reduce my spending until things level out or get better, that I can go back to my usual consumption level. So the economy, you know, it does impact some aspects of it, but I don't think, like I said, I think sport is one of those things that it survives through recessions, you know, just because of that passion and interest.
In the end, it's just, we just love sports so much that we just don't care, right?
And, you know, remember, you know, sport is selling. I remember talking to somebody about this back, like with the Phillies, I remember it was the series with the Padres. They were talking about the pricing, and I said, look, I don't think many people were complaining when they walked out of that stadium when Harper hit that home run. They had been a part of history. They had been a part of an event. It's one of those games that, they hold 40-some thousands in Citizen Bank, but 5 years from now, there's probably a good 200,000 that were there, according to that, you know, according to themselves. And again, when we start getting to playoffs, these are becoming iconic moments in the city's history. And to say that you were there, you had that experience, and you walk out after that game, I don't think you're thinking twice about how much you spent on that ticket, you know, in that sense. So I think that's the one thing that's unique about sport.
Thanks to University of Delaware Professor of Sports Management Matt Robinson and our Joe Irizarry for enlightening us this week.